Today's reading is John chapter 13, verses 12 to 30, and that can be found on page 1085. That's page 1085, John chapter 13, verses 12 to 30. When he had washed their feet and put on his outer garments and resumed his place, he said to them, "Do you understand what I have done to you? You call me teacher and Lord, and you are right. For so I am. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example, that you also should do just as I have done to you. Truly, truly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you if you do them. I am not speaking of all of you. I know whom I have chosen. But the scripture will be fulfilled. He who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. I am telling you this now, before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever receives the one I send receives me, and whoever receives me receives the one who sent me." After saying these things, Jesus was troubled in his spirit and testified, "Truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me." The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. One of his disciples, whom Jesus loved, was reclining at table close to Jesus. So Simon Peter motioned to him to ask Jesus whom he was speaking. So that disciple, leaning back against Jesus, said to him, "Lord, who is it?" Jesus answered, "It is he to whom I will give this morsel of bread when I have dipped it." So when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Then, after he had taken the morsel, Satan entered into him. Jesus said to him, "What you are going to do, do quickly." Now, no one at the table knew why he had said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the money bag, Jesus was telling him, "Buy what we need for the feast," or that he should give something to the poor. So, after receiving the morsel of bread, he immediately went out, and it was night.
Thank you, Deborah. Thank you very much indeed. And welcome to St. Helens this evening, particularly if you're new. I know there are actually quite a few students here, despite what William said. So welcome. It's good to see you as well as everyone new to work here. If you weren't here last week, then we're carrying on a series in John's Gospel that's going to keep us going all the way through into November. Please open John 13 back up, if you could, page 1085, and look down at verse 14. Verse 14 is the key command in our chapter. If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. That's the command to us in the chapter. That's the command we have to apply this evening. He washed their feet, then he told them to wash each other's. But unless you've come specially prepared, I guess most of us aren't ready with bottles of water and shampoo and towels this evening. What does it actually mean to wash each other's feet. What does Jesus mean? And that's our first point. First point, do just as I've done to you. There's an outline on the back of the notice sheet. 10 years ago, I was helping out at South Bank University Christian Union. And it's fair to say back then, 10 years ago, the CU was going through a sort of anything goes sort of phase. It was quite exciting going along each week. And one week, we all went back to the president's flat. And she brought out a big bowl of water and announced that we were all going to wash each other's feet. But not just wash smelly feet. The way this was going to work was she said, you have to choose somebody you need to say sorry to. And then you need to go down on your knees and take hold of their foot and list publicly all the things you've done wrong to them while you wash their toes. And then in one of the most honest and most seriously embarrassing moments of my Christian life, she did exactly that. Off came the shoes of the guitarist, and out came all her frustrations with the way he led the music and how stubborn he was and how angry she'd been and then how sorry she was. And we all watched, terrified, about who was going next. And what happened next? She finished. The really stunned musician was kind of putting his shoes back on. And she turned to me and she said, Charlie! Oh, no. Charlie will now explain John 13 before the next person has their go. It was just, I could have hugged her. It was such a relief. I'd never done any work on John 13. I didn't have the first idea what it was about. But I understood, if you just say something, you won't have to do any of this foot stuff. But actually, it was a shame. It was a shame I didn't know more about John 13, because I could have saved everyone else the embarrassment of the next hour. Because verse 14 does not mean what that wonderful, enthusiastic president thought it did. Almost exactly the opposite, actually, of what she thought it meant. She thought that you washed people's feet to say sorry. Well, last week, washing feet was about forgiveness, but only when Jesus does it. And even then, she has it the exact wrong way around, doesn't she? 2,000 years ago, the person who knelt down to do the washing was not the person who needed to say sorry. Jesus washes feet to explain his death. Jesus washes feet to say, I will make guilty people clean. The one in the chair getting the manicure is the guilty one. Now, I think, the CU president, I think she could have got us to do almost anything, but I think even she would have struggled to make us do it the Jesus way around. So how would it gain it? Anyone here need forgiveness for anything? Great. Sarah has been stealing from Tim. That's brilliant. Now, I'm Sarah. Come and down here and sit on a chair. And Tim, kneel on the floor and wash her feet. Can you hear Tim's sort of voice? But she stole my money. What's going on? I don't think she could have got us to do it that way around, to put the innocent person on the floor in disgrace and the guilty one on the chair in comfort. And if you can feel the shock of that, then you understand the part of the example that is for us, the part that we are supposed to obey, that the shock and the humiliation of it, the wrong way roundness of it, that it should be you doing this, not me. That's the part we're to copy. So verse 8, verse 10 last week confirmed for us that Jesus washes feet to explain his death. 24 hours later, he's going to die. And the foot washing tells us two things about his death. His death washes us clean, and his death will be a degraded humiliation. That's what we said last week. So when he tells everyone to wash, tells us to wash everyone's feet, he cannot mean go and die to forgive sins. He cannot mean the first bit. That bit is only for Jesus. He means the second bit. The bit for us is the degraded humiliation. It's just like lots of times when Jesus talks about his death. I'm going to die, so you take up your cross and follow me. Doesn't mean we're going to forgive sins. Just means we're going to copy him, his example. So wash each other's feet means serve each other. In any way that's needed, if you have dirty feet, it might mean washing feet. But particularly it means when serving will cost you your status. Jesus is teacher and Lord in verse 13. This is how he explains it. But he does slave work. He ruined his status. He degraded himself. All the way from Lord to foot washing slave. And then he told us, go and do just as I have done to you. On Wednesday night this week, we looked at these verses with the teams who serve us on Sunday nights, the people who cook the food and take out the bins at after eights, the people who clear up the fag ends by the door and find you a seat, the people who wash our feet. See, almost anything would count in this, as long as you're doing it for a brother or a sister, and as long as it involves you giving up your status, trading down in degradation and serving someone else. It's the same as where the whole chapter goes. I think it's the same as verse 20 about receiving people. So particularly anybody you don't want to be seen with, anybody it would be a dip in status to be friends with. And then over the page, verse 34, it's the same as loving one another that we'll get to next week. So it's every single time, the burden of these verses is every single time you see a need and you think, I won't help with that because I am higher status than that. Because it would demean me, damage me in some way to do that. I don't know what that's. I'm too old to carry Bibles. I'm too cool to talk to them. I'm too rich to wash dishes. I'm too clever to carry chairs. I'm too good looking to be friends with them. I'm too senior to pick up litter. Whenever that kind of thinking, I don't know what it would be for you, stops us serving, then John 13 verse 14 is to us. You also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you should do just as I have done to you. Wouldn't it be great this year as we start a new year with welcoming lots of new people among us as people come and join us? Wouldn't it be great if we were a year at St. Helens, a 6 p.m. service that really followed Jesus' example on this, where status really didn't matter, where loving each other, serving each other would be the thing that counted. It's the same old lesson always as in the Christian life, isn't it? Last week, you only get in through the cross of Jesus. You only get a share with Jesus through the cross. This week, the only way to follow him, the only way to be a disciple is to live the cross, is to die every day, put your status to death. That's what the passage means. That's the command. And what we're going to do now for the remainder of our time is all about how hard that is to do. Because of how hard it is to do, John 13, I think, really lays out encouragement for us. Encouragement to follow this example. Look at Jesus on the floor, dressed like a slave. And the first encouragement, our point two on the sheet, is think about his identity. Think about where he's come from to do that. So point two, identity and service. See, when Jesus asked them in verse 12, do you understand what I've done? He immediately talks about his identity. Verse 13, you call me teacher and Lord, and you're right, for so I am. And if I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, then you can. It's the same thing Peter was so upset about last week. You shall never wash my feet. You're too important. We said last week, Jesus does here what male Jewish slaves thought was beneath them. They were too male and too Jewish to do this, to wash feet. And the more you understand how great Jesus is, the more it takes away our excuses for humble service. Do you see how that works? He is Lord and teacher. And I believe that. I hope you do. And so he is. But he does slave work for them. So do the same. Unless, verse 16 asks, unless you think you're greater than Jesus. A servant is not greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. And there go all my excuses, don't they? Whenever I think serving another Christian is beneath me or some job is below me, I just need to check whether I'm greater than Jesus or not. It's a total scandal that Jesus washed feet. Utterly unimaginable that he died for me on a torture instrument designed for slaves. But he did. And if he can do that, given how great he is, then unless I'm greater than him, I can wash dishes or clean loos or love someone that doesn't make me look good. That's the argument, I think. And I reckon this will be quite a hard command for us at St. Helens to obey, particularly. I guess there'll be people here who find this particularly hard because of the worlds we come from and the worlds we work in. A bit like some of what Ollie was saying earlier. I don't know, some professions are particularly like this, aren't they? I think of hospitals particularly. Though it's a bit confused, I think, the ranking. I asked some King's Medical School people just now what the ranks were. They didn't know. They argued. It's all very confusing. I think it goes, and you all wear it on your badge, don't you? Where's an actual doctor? You wear it on your badge, and you know, are you an F1? Oh, well, maybe next year you'll be an F2. Oh, you are. Lovely. Oh, but you're a, now they didn't know, house officer, S1, or 2, or 3, or 4, or 5, or 6, and now you're a consultant? Sounds very impressive, doesn't it? Until I realise that's people I studied with. Not quite so impressive. Extraordinary kind of status, ranking on your badge, how I treat you. Or music students, actually music students, William, are just back in London, arrived back. That is a very status competitive profession, isn't it? Graded 1 to 8 all the way through your childhood. Then on to diplomas, then into intense competition to get onto a course, then graded by who you play with or who you play to, or by whether you get a job, whether you can keep a job, whether you can earn enough to live. Fact though, I reckon most of the jobs here this evening involve lots and lots of competition, lots of ranking. So actually do our social lives, don't they? In every group of friends, there's a pecking order. And all sorts of things determine that, don't they? Even kind of completely crazy things, money or what you look like, matter more than we'd want to admit. Or socially, I guess most of us pretend we're classless, don't we? But if you think that's you, just try and get somebody you don't like to try and pull rank on you and see how you feel about it. Discover whether you think you're classless or not. And that we all carry our rank and our status culture into church with us. Unless we look very, very carefully at Jesus, at who he was, stripping off his very, very high status to die on the cross for us. Are you greater than him? Is there some reason why I'm so important that I won't do in a small way what my Lord did with his entire life? And given that's the point in 13 to 16, it's not surprising there's lots of information about his status in the chapter. So let's just big up Jesus for a bit so that you're convinced he's bigger than you. It's how the chapter begins, verse 1. He's leaving the world to go to his Father. Anybody else here? Does your Father rule the universe and live outside it? That's quite big. Or verse 3, that Father gave Jesus a present. Put all things into his hands. Are you important because of the car keys you've got in your hands at the moment? Jesus had everything put into his hands. And his Father's name is God, in verse 3. Son of God on the name badge. Then from verse 18 onwards, we're into talking about his betrayal quite a bit. And the betrayal makes two claims about his identity, which are both in verse 18 and verse 19. Just look down at them. In verse 18, Jesus quotes a psalm to explain what's about to happen to him. The scripture will be fulfilled, and he who ate my bread has lifted his heel against me. The reference is on your sheets. Betrayal by Jesus is fulfilling a prophecy. Jesus will be betrayed by somebody who ate his bread just like King David. That's the prophecy that's coming true because of who Jesus is. He's the king. He's King David. He's the Messiah of the Jewish people. That's quite big. Then verse 19 goes bigger, actually. He says, I'm telling you this in advance, before it takes place, that when it does take place, you may believe that I am he. Nobody suspected Judas. They haven't got a clue in verse 22 who he means. Even after Jesus gives two of them a clue by dipping bread in a dish and giving it to Jesus, still verse 28, no one at the table knew why he said this to them. No one could have predicted Judas, the 12 close friends. No one could have predicted it. But Jesus knows all about it, which is really good evidence he's more than just a human being, isn't it? once it comes true, so that when it does take place, you'll believe that I am he, which is Jesus using the name of God again, as he has several times in John. I am the name Yahweh from the Old Testament. So are you greater? Are you greater than the Messiah who is also God? What is it that I would be giving up if I served people that he didn't give up for me? That is the example in verse 15 of God on his knees washing feet. And I want to push this on to get all of us to ask these questions. And I want to include deliberately people who are serving already, just in case you're feeling, well, I'm okay on this. I already wash lots of feet. Just let me ask, as you serve, do you have sort of dignity limits on what you will and won't do? I'll serve food and wash up, but I won't take out stinking bins. I'll just kind of gently leave them until somebody else does it. Or I'll have people around to lunch, but I won't introduce them to my real friends. I don't want to lose status. And as we serve, again, we need to be really careful not to serve because actually in this weird group of people, serving adds to our status. I so quickly get tricked back into status ways of thinking. So this morning, church this morning, I spotted something that needed doing. And I ran through the emotions of this passage. My first thought was, I wonder whose job that is. Then a brief moment of, I shouldn't have to do that. Luckily, this passage helped me. That didn't last very long. And then as I started doing it, I was aching for someone to come and see me at it. Just aching. You know, anyone, here I am, you know, anyone come around the corner, being really humble, which is all about being moved up the ranks, isn't it? It's pathetic, isn't it? But it's so easy to do. And I want to recommend that over food afterwards, we talk together about some questions. We talk together about these issues, try and help each other. Here's a couple of questions for point two you might want to write down. So maybe ask each other, are there areas of service that I won't do because I think they're beneath me? Are there areas of service I won't do because I think they're beneath me? That'll be the first question. Then if you've got that one, let me give you one more. Are there areas of service I wouldn't be able to keep doing if people didn't notice, if it didn't improve my standing? Are there areas of service I wouldn't be able to keep doing if it didn't improve my status, if people didn't notice? Just ask about those. Those are about whether we're worried about being great. Okay, now let's go to the second encouragement in this chapter. Point three, betrayal and service. Are you worse treated? Now, let me tell you the puzzle I've been trying to work out since I started looking at this passage back in July. Because this chapter could have been structured so much more simply, couldn't it? Let me tell you how I'd have done it. You'd have had part one about foot washing. We'd have stuck on foot washing. We'd have seen Jesus wash feet, then we'd have said, go and wash each other's feet. Part one, done. Then there would have been part two with a load of stuff about Judas betraying Jesus. That would have been very neat. Two subjects, two parts, done. But the puzzle I've been chewing on is that John does not do it like that. Nothing like that. Just look where Judas keeps coming up all the way through the chapter, all the way through the supper. So verse 2, the foot washing happens during the particular supper when Judas is already deciding to betray Jesus. Why does John mention that? Then verse 10, he's washed the feet. You're all clean. But not all of you. And John pauses to explain that means Judas. Then 14 to 17 explain about what washing feet means. Then 18 and 19 go for betrayal before verse 20 goes back to the washing feet thing again, receive. And it's only then we get a clear break at verse 21 after saying these things and we start talking about betrayal all the way through. Now, why, anyone spot that as we read it? Why is betrayal messed in with all the foot washing? What is John teaching us through that? It's the sort of thing that a writer does very deliberately for a reason. And I've been ringing friends to see if they know and I've been trying to think, why betrayal? Why is betrayal important? Why is it such a big deal in the Gospels that Jesus is betrayed rather than just captured or arrested or something like that? Why is betrayal a big deal? And I think here's why it is. I think John is using betrayal
the same way he used identity. They're both being used to help us wash each other's feet. So if you know about identity, we know how high Jesus started from. But if we think carefully about betrayal, we realize how low Jesus stooped. Does that make sense? They're flip sides of each other. Identity pushes him very high. Betrayal, the key thing about it is the lowest possible human experience. It pushes Jesus very low. That is that's certainly the emotional content in the psalm he quotes. Just turn to page 563 very quickly. Page 563, which is Psalm 41. Keep a finger in John 13. Sorry if you haven't already shut that. Psalm 41 is David talking about his sufferings. If you pick it up about verse 4, verse 5, he has enemies. Verse 6, they're just uttering empty words. Verse 7, they're whispering about him, imagining the worst for him. Then verse 9, the worst thing, the climax, the worst of all, even my close friend in whom I trusted, who ate my bread, has lifted up his heel against me. That's the lowest place to be. How do you feel? How do you feel when you are betrayed? I don't know if you can remember. I did a close friend at school blab out your secrets to everybody. Do you remember that feeling in the playground? You've betrayed me. Anyone ever stitch you up at work? You come staggering out of a meeting thinking, you've just completely betrayed me. Or worst of all, I guess, worst of all, though most of us know people who've been through this, is finding out when there's unfaithfulness in a relationship. Betrayal there. And Jesus was betrayed. That's what happened to him. This is how it felt for him. That's why he quotes the psalm. And go back to John and verse 21. You get a glimpse inside his soul. Troubled in spirit. He isn't just sort of glibly saying, one of you's going to betray me. That's a historical detail. He's troubled in his spirit. And the whole scene in verse 21 to 30 goes very, very, very slowly. You'll betray me. We can't imagine any of us doing that. This is the 12, his closest friends. So Simon Peter takes the initiative. He leans over. He asks John, our author, to get the idea from Jesus, to say who it is. And Jesus now has a problem, doesn't he? Because Jesus needs to say enough, needs to make it clear enough, that afterwards they'll know he definitely predicted it. But he doesn't need to say so much that he'll stop Judas betraying him. You can just imagine Peter kind of thumping Judas. We'll put a stop to that. So Jesus uses the psalm, and he uses a piece of bread as the signal. Again, probably the worst way to betray someone in Middle Eastern culture, to take their bread and then kill them. Probably just Judas and John, close enough to hear him say it. Verse 26, it is he to whom I'll give this morsel of bread when I've dipped it. So he dips it, and he passes it to Judas. Judas's last chance to come to his senses. But as he takes the bread, did you see it? Satan enters him. And Jesus gets him out of the room. What you're going to do quickly. And even with all the talk about betrayal, and even with the kind of dip bread signal, Judas is such a close friend, they cannot think it would be him. None of them can think it would be him. They can only think he must be off to do something good, something friendly, something responsible with the money. Buy Jesus some food, maybe, or give some money to the poor, verse 29. That's what a close, trusted friend would do, isn't it? But really, Judas is off to sell Jesus and fill his money bag with as much as he can get. My close friend is going to cash me in. And this is the point where we move from the illustration of humble service with disgusting smelly toes through to the real thing. Jesus went so low that not just his enemies attacked him, but his friends as well. That is the example. And just like with his identity, where you can ask, am I greater? Do I have an excuse not to serve? here, same with his betrayal, we can ask, am I really treated worse than Jesus? And if the answer is no, then I can keep serving. And it's important, isn't it, to know that? Important to be clear-headed on that, because when Jesus commands us to serve each other degradingly and humbly, that is a recipe for being mistreated, isn't it? Let's not pretend that as we serve each other, it'll be a kind of wonderful bed of being thanked and people being happy with you and you, all that sort of thing. As long as Christians are not very good at imagining what it's like to be someone else, and as long as most of us are lazy and ungrateful, serving like this will be a recipe for being mistreated. My first job in a church involved clearing up after the prayer meeting, not this church. And it was my job to stack all the chairs and put them away after the meeting finished. And it was a friendly meeting, and everybody, they stayed and they talked and they stood with their hands on hips and kind of chatted to each other. So I would kind of weave in and out round them, trying to get the chairs and trying to make a stack and then stagger across the room past them to put it on the table, thinking, would you not help? Can you not see what's happening? It's easy to think that, isn't it? Think all sorts of bad things about the people you're serving. You know, would it kill you just once at after eight to stack the paper plates at the clues in the big black bin liner? I do this every week. And you need a really healthy doctrine of sin to serve for long in a church. To realize people aren't just being sort of weirdly bad to you because they don't like you. We're just being people. We're just being sinful, normal people. So here's the question to discuss afterwards. Question to write down. Are there areas of service I'm about to give up because of how I get treated? Are there areas of service I'm about to give up because of how I get treated? See, to really understand what Jesus did for us is to be protected in Christian service. Protected from grumbling, protected from giving up. Wouldn't it be great, again, St. Helens, 2010, not to give up because of the example of my Lord and Judas right there in front of me. If I'm not greater than him and I'm not treated worse than him, then maybe I can degrade myself one more time and do what it is that my brothers and sisters need doing. But in conclusion, I don't want to leave us with grey faces on this. This is upside down for our culture, isn't it? It is going to hurt my pride sometimes. But it is part of Jesus looking after us, giving us this command. So verse 17, that is how to be blessed or happy. This is how to get the joy of serving and be free of the agony of pride. Verse 1, this is his way of loving us. I think verse 1 doesn't just mean he loved us by washing our feet, doesn't just mean he loved us by dying, but it includes the command as well. He loved us by setting it up this way, that all of us here are to be slaves of each other, are to degrade ourselves, to love each other. The fag ends outside in the gutter, or the person you don't want to talk to, that is Jesus' way of loving you, as he gives you the command to degrade yourself for them. And Jesus knows all about love, doesn't he? Verse 30, just look at the very end of the section. And it was night as Judas goes out. That means Jesus' time is up. If you know John, you'll know there's a ticking clock all the way through. How many hours of daylight left? How many hours in which we can do God's work? Now the time has run away. Judas is safely out the door. Jesus has done that, and the cross is set in motion. Jesus had his last time for backing out. Verse 27 is his moment of decision. What you're going to do, do quickly. This is our master. This is how much he loved us. And this is how much he asks us to love each other. I wonder, are we ready to copy that example? Shall we pray for help? Father God, praise you that Jesus served us. Praise you that you sent him, the Lord of creation, your own Son, to serve us. We praise and thank you. We rejoice in it. But Father, please help us to copy him. Help us to be willing not to guard our tiny little status more than he guarded his great one. And help us not to shy back from hurt and betrayal or bad treatment when he faced all of it and went to the cross. Lord, please make us a place where love and service and humility is what we're known for, what we're like, what it's like to be here. Lord, please change us. Please show us Jesus more and more clearly so that we would live more like him. We ask this in his name. Amen.